Hello and welcome back to AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgVenta Group. I'm your host, Sarah Nolet. If you're paying attention to AgTech these days, you're hearing a lot about carbon. But let's face it, as interest grows and more tech and capital flow into this space, it's increasingly confusing, complex, and even sometimes contentious. And there are some big open questions, like how do we get more farmers to participate? How can we ensure that what we're incentivizing is actually good for the environment? And who should bear the cost of practice changes? We've dug into soil carbon before on the podcast, but wanted to revisit it, and in particular, a key question. What's the incentive? Basically, how do we, and should we, make ecosystem services markets easier to measure, access, and understand?
It's in a state of rapid maturing of all of that.
That's Richard Heath, Executive Director at the Australian Farm Institute, an ag policy think tank here in Australia.
Which is why it's confusing at the moment, why it seems like that there's lots of different metrics and lots of different systems that are being talked about, but it will coalesce over time. It's just the way that, markets work. How we get there more quickly and how we do it in a way that makes sense for farmers and farm businesses to participate equitably, that's the challenge.
On the panel, which was originally recorded live as part of an Australian AgriTech Association meetup, you'll also hear from Rob Waterworth, CEO of AgTech startup FlintPro.
I'd also say that a lot of the things that we're seeing at the moment have also been thought about in the 90s and the 2000s, and we've cycled around them a number of times. So while there is certainly new technology and new thinking, a lot of the policy issues that are actually being faced have been addressed for a long time.
And while Rob's right, some of these issues have been around for a while, one thing that's changed is that big food and ag companies are paying serious attention to soil carbon. Paul Schooler is a strategic sourcing manager from Mars in their pet care division, running a program for growers to help them measure and increase soil carbon.
If the growers don't trust us, if they just see us as corporations trying to make themselves look better, we know we're only going to get limited benefits. So these farming groups are core to our success.
We start with each panelist outlining what they see as the biggest hurdles and opportunities in this space. Here's Richard, who used to be a farmer himself, on the three broad market influences creating participation and incentive pathways.
The first being commitments, international commitments, and the obvious one there being the Paris Agreement that we are signed up to as a country. Now, the incentive mechanism is the Emissions Reduction Fund. The other big market influence is corporate risk, and this is one that is increasingly important and having an increasing impact on, and sometimes quite insidiously, that you know a lot of farm businesses wouldn't necessarily be realising, but through the way that banks interact with them, insurance companies, even big multinational supply chain companies that are managing, that are required to manage and mitigate their risk around things like climate change. And there's some really big global programs like the Task Force for Climate Financial Disclosure and the Task Force for Nature Financial Disclosure, which are starting to determine the way that most companies assess and deal with sustainability risk. And a mechanism that that's being applied through here is now the Accounting for Nature framework. But there are many others, you know, and it's a rapidly developing field. And then the final C is consumers, obviously. And, you know, consumers have a real interest in sustainability and are increasingly prepared to pay more and reflect their behaviour or change their behaviour around wanting to have sustainability outcomes. And that's where industry frameworks like the Better Cotton Initiative, for instance, come into play. And often the most direct way that farm businesses will interact is through an industry framework that has been driven a lot by consumer perceptions and consumer demand.
The three market influences Richard has outlined, government commitments, corporate risk, and consumers, all overlap. And this is in part why the space is so confusing. It's just not clear how to participate.
You know, the Paris commitments and the Paris framework is informing the way that a lot of corporates will offset their risk or manage their risk. They'll be doing it through the sorts of frameworks that have been set up to deliver on international agreements. But for all of those, there is one outcome. And if we focus on carbon and soil carbon, it is essentially all about sequestering carbon. So no matter how fuzzy the incentive pathway is, where it's coming from, the end result, the desirable outcome, is that a ton of carbon dioxide is sequestered or multiples of. If we think again about how much they overlap and where the incentive pathways are going to occur in those, and we look at those three that I mentioned, the Better Cotton Initiative helps you to deliver against corporate risk with a consumer focus. The Emissions Reduction Fund is about delivering on international commitments, but is also providing offsetting mechanisms that corporate risk can be mitigated. Accounting for Nature, which is a natural capital measurement system, sits right in the middle of all of those. So again, you look at that as a farm business sort of wondering how to participate, wondering where the incentive is, and it's a mess. You know, there's all sorts of pathways. It's overlapping Venn diagram of possibilities. So how do we move towards that outcome focus that makes things a bit more consistent, makes things a bit more clearer in terms of what you're trying to do, that make the incentives make more sense? And what we need is consistency, compatibility of indicators, metrics and targets. So that one tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent is one tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent, regardless of the incentive. You know, it's being measured the same, it's being described the same way, it's clearly recognised as a farm business that lets you participate in multiple incentive pathways, and there's no barrier between switching pathways because it is all using the same language and there's consistency there. So if the outcome is the focus, then that makes that more likely that we're going to get there. Rather than thinking about practices to do it, if we're thinking about the outcome, then it's more likely that we get that consistency and compatibility across all those incentive pathways. But I want to make it clear, and we'll get to this more in the discussion, that it should not be the sole focus. And there is the real potential for perverse and distortionary outcomes if a single outcome does become the focus and a whole market and a reward pathway builds up around delivering a single outcome, even if that single outcome is sequestering carbon.
Rob from Flint Pro has a similar view, but starts by digging into the why. Why farmers, corporates, and governments want to get involved in soil carbon.
So we've been involved in carbon accounting now for over 20 years. Mainly we started off working in designing and building Australia's national carbon accounting systems. I think the fascinating part is that over that time, we've seen lots of different changes in this market. But I always try to bring it back to what we call the Ken principle. And Ken is simple from our perspective, is there's really three reasons for doing this. You're either trying to keep access to your existing markets, you're trying to expand into your existing markets more through gaining competitive advantage, or you're looking for new markets. And if you break it up into those three, you can start to see people falling into sometimes all those categories, sometimes the first one. And with obviously recently a very strong focus on new market mechanisms of late, in particular, obviously, emissions trading, voluntary carbon standards and things. So it's a really interesting and evolving space. And I'd also say that a lot of the things that we're seeing at the moment have also been thought about in the 90s and the 2000s, and we've cycled around them a number of times. So while there is certainly new technology and new thinking, a lot of the policy issues that are actually being faced have been addressed for a long time. So obviously, I wouldn't be a CEO if I didn't plug our product. So very quickly, our main system that we've developed is called Flint Pro. I won't go too much into it, but it is an online system for integrating multiple streams of data for estimating all types of metrics. It has an initial focus on carbon and greenhouse gas emissions, but it's highly modular, and we've been looking at things like biodiversity and soil health and crops and a whole lot of other factors that the system can run. There are three key things that we keep seeing that we think are really important to look at. The first one is that we need to start moving from tools to systems. And this comes to Richard's point about you don't want to have an outcome. There's lots of different things that can happen. If you start focusing on an outcome only, you can end up with quite perverse results. Also, if you're actually starting to look at markets and other aspects, you can't just have lots of little tools all just running separately. You actually need to have systems in place that can support that, from paddock all the way through to the farm, to the farm enterprise, to large organisations, even up to the national scales, the types of nesting issues. The second point is to start thinking about our metrics much more in terms of usefulness, metrics and data. So one of the things that always concerns me is that accuracy appears to be the metric that everyone talks about. Accuracy is an important aspect of any metric, but it is only one aspect. And it's actually one that has clouded our thinking very badly for the last 15 years and has often caused things to stall and stop as people have argued about whose map is slightly more accurate or whose model is slightly more accurate. That's actually not helping. We need to actually come up to understand and be very clear that what we're looking for is a system that meets a set of performance criteria of which accuracy is only one. And I'm hoping that that actually sparks a bit of discussion because that should be mildly controversial. And then the final point, which comes across all of these, which is there is actually no silver bullet here. So there's lots of different metrics, there's lots of different systems, but the key is that you can't do everything with one. You can't do everything with remote sensing, you can't do everything with ground data, you can't do everything with models. The challenge is going to come, how do you integrate those in a sensible fashion to actually give you what you need? And if you look at it from an integration perspective, I think we're actually very close.
Now let's hear from Paul on how Mars is working with their suppliers on a project called the Cool Soil Initiative.
So I'm from Mars. I'm not the CEO, but I will plug our products as well. So I'm from the pet care division. So if you've heard of things like Pedigree, Chum, Whiskers, My Dog, those kind of brands, that's actually a really big part of Mars, not just the sexy stuff like the Mars bars and M&Ms. So it's a big part of what we do, and a big part of what we buy is grains and cereal. So I want to talk a little bit about our project that we've got happening at the moment. And I guess the background to that is owned privately by the Mars company, and the Mars family have got a very specific way of doing things, a very clear vision, and they've been on the sustainability track for quite a long time now. So for the Mars business, sustainability is the right thing to do. There's a real social obligation to do that. But increasingly what we're seeing is it's the profitable thing to do. The marketplace, consumers and customers are demanding that the products they buy are clean, green, sustainable. They don't want to be associated with products that are going to harm the environment. So there's a couple of real pulls for Mars Pet Care. Mars have got really ambitious goals to be greenhouse gas free within a quite tight timeline. And when we look at our global footprint, the majority comes from the paddock. So meats are a big one for us, but grains and cereals are really closely behind. So we know we've got to be very active in that space. We know we can't go to the market and with a stick and demand that they come out and reduce their greenhouse gas. We've gone for a different approach. We're working collaboratively with growers to improve their business, but also to reduce our footprint on the planet. The Cool Soil Initiative is a project where we're working with growers, we're working with industry, we're working with university to come up with methodologies to identify the practices that contribute to greenhouse gas and contribute to sequestration of greenhouse gases as well. What we're trying to do is deliver a credible framework for the industry so we can support croppers in reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. So long-term sustainability, long-term yield stability, really through science-based practices, so agronomic strategies to increase soil health. So we've broken it down to three objectives. So the first one is to demonstrate relevance. And the way we're doing that, we're going through the different farming groups to get a real collaborative, get that peer group involved and getting real buy-in. So it's quite timely this week we've been talking to our farming groups, Riverine Plains on Tuesday, FarmLink on Wednesday, Central West today, and really hearing their inputs, what's important to them. We're telling about what we're doing, but we're also listening to make sure that we've got the right level of involvement. Develop the supporting platform of research and digital solutions. So we're using a product called the Cool Farm Tool, which has been generated in the United States, which is an online tool which helps growers understand what their carbon footprint is based on their inputs and their yields. We're also using spatial analysis through Charles Sturt University, and we're grabbing all that data along with soil samples and creating a combined picture so the grower really understands how their land is performing, but also what the different practices, the impacts that they have on them as well. And the third objective is that the food industry partners have a clear feedback on their investment. So at the moment, we've got Kellogg's, we've got Allied Pinnacle, we've got Manildra. So we've got some really big hitters in this space working on this project. And the key thing about this project, it's pre-competitive. So it's not about getting a leg up on competitors, although we'd really like to. It's about how do we work together to get that critical mass going so we can really support this. And what we're finding is by coming together with these groups, you know, we've got real good peer support, we're learning in these meetings, we're developing that trust. And that's the key to this success. If the growers don't trust us, if they just see us as corporations trying to make themselves look better, we know we're only going to get limited benefits. So that these farming groups are a core to our success.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. And thanks to everyone for sharing their perspectives. We will jump into a bit of a discussion. So I guess what I want to start with something Richard said around that there are, and I think Rob mentioned it as well, potentially outcomes isn't the silver bullet. And actually, it was interesting as we thought about structuring this discussion, there was a bit of an assumption maybe that we should move to outcomes-based ecosystem services markets, but that's probably not the case or comes at least with a caveat. Richard, do you want to talk a little bit about what you mean there and what are some of those perverse incentives that can crop up?
Sure. So I might start with an example. If the outcome, if the payment system and the market is based on the sole outcome of sequestering carbon in soil, and supposing there is an ability to measure so that it's just based on that, it is just based on measuring the concentration of carbon in soil and how that changes over time. One of the easiest ways to influence that is to compact your soil. If you compact your soil, you'll increase the carbon concentration in the way that it's measured. That is a perverse outcome. And the way to get around that is to, you have to stack benefits, or you have to deliver co-benefits, or you have to recognise the practice that is sequestering the carbon in the soil rather than just the outcome of having a higher concentration of carbon in the soil. So that's what I mean by perverse outcomes, and potentially, and obviously most farmers are not going to do that because that's a really stupid thing to do for a whole lot of other reasons. But it is demonstrating that the capacity is there to game the system if it is just that focus on one outcome and one deliverable outcome.
Yeah, speaking of farmer perspectives, Paul, you mentioned dealing with these different groups and things. What have you been hearing from farmers? What's the view in terms of boots on the ground from growers about this whole space?
Yeah, so for over the last 3 days, we've heard three clear messages coming out as to why growers really want to get involved in this program. The first is just the economics, the finance of their business. So, you know, growers know that if they've got healthier soils, they've got higher yields, it's better for them. You know, they're getting more out of their crops, but also the consumer is pulling sustainable goods out of the marketplace. So it makes them more attractive to sell their grain as well. From a policy point of view, growers know it's only a matter of time before the government's in their paddocks and telling them what to do and having a real interest in their carbon level. So growers really want to get ahead of that and get, you know, ahead of the curve so that when that does come around, you know, they're prepared and they've already got good practices in place. But probably the biggest thing that resonated, and something I heard throughout the week, growers believe they're custodians of the land. You know, the common theme is they want to return the land in a better way than they inherited it. So, you know, there's three really good levers, positive levers, that we can pull to get momentum in this space. Ultimately, where we see this going is growers realise the benefit for these practices, and they see this as a part of improving their business as well. So while we don't have any vision of cutting this program off in the near future, in fact, we don't have an end date for this project, the success of this project will depend on these practices being incorporated into a farmer's business to make it a profitable business.
And do you see that continuing long term? Like they're seeing the kind of co-benefits or private benefits as well of some of these practices. And so the expectation is they'll keep doing it long term without kind of government intervention?
Well, that's the feedback we're getting from the growers. The growers, I guess they're a little bit skeptical because they want proof that these practices work. And to be honest, we're 4 years into this project. We've only got four data sets over four different crops. So we're still early getting this data as well. But the overwhelming feeling from growers is we want the proof so we can pick this up and run with it long term.
Rob, you're nodding. What do you think?
No, I totally agree. And I think the other point that Paul was raising there in particular is around this custodianship and soil health and actually increasing productivity. I think to me, it's such an obvious thing that is why you're making most of these practices. Soil carbon is a really important aspect. It may be entering into a new market that may be useful, but realistically, if you can get more production by doing these practices, then that's probably where the vast majority of your profit's actually going to come from. It's going to be better quality and higher yield crops, and the soils is a bit of a benefit. And of course, we want to gain all the benefits as much as possible, and increasing farm income for sustainability is very important. But we need to, you know, keep our focus on the main game.
Richard, you're nodding there on some of the points around metrics and measuring, but that's a pretty tough nut to crack still in terms of actually getting metrics that people agree on. Do you want to talk a little bit about how we can kind of make progress in that space?
I'm reasonably confident it's going to happen only because of the very high level global pressures and initiatives now that start to influence the global finance system from top down that require common metrics and require common reporting systems. So, you know, it's in a state of rapid maturing of all of that, which is why it's confusing at the moment, why it seems like that there's lots of different metrics and lots of different systems that are being talked about. But it will coalesce over time. It's just the way that, that markets work. How we get there more quickly and how we do it in a way that makes sense for farmers and farm businesses to participate equitably, that's the challenge. And that's why, you know, I'm glad that there's these industry initiatives that, that are trying to sort of guide that and steer that.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of talk of it will consolidate and there will be, you know, clarity. But I think right now it feels super confusing, whether you're a farmer looking at all these tools and industry standards. You've got, you know, beef sustainability frameworks, so sector specific. You've got industry wide. Mm-hmm. You've got, no, we need government to manage it. No, it's private sector. And then on the, you know, investor side, we get pitch decks from dozens of companies, you know, every month that are solving different pieces of this problem. So it feels a little bit like that's true in the future. But for anyone kind of trying to make decisions now, not feeling very true. I know, Rob, you've been in this space a while. Does it feel different now than it has in the past? And what gives you hope that we're going to solve this problem in the near term here?
It feels different in that in some ways it's even more confusing because, as you said, everyone's coming up with a solution at the moment. You know, if I was to be a bit blunt, when we're dealing with a lot of companies who produce remote sensing data, and we partner with a lot of them have just sort of spun out of university with an algorithm. And it's a problem to then actually come back and say, well, that's a great algorithm, but it's only a small part. And actually, there's other groups doing that. And so it creates confusion in the space. There's no question. Even on simple metrics, though, even if you were just to say a metric of soil carbon sequestration is difficult to do because how are you baselining that? And are you assessing whether it's against a BAU or just an increase? You know, even those metrics get really tough when you look at them, even though they start very simple. You've got exactly the same numbers. You can create different metrics from them. But having said that, I think there are, in particular in the startup community, some really great companies coming through that have figured out how to take tech and move it to scale and move it to scale reliably. And Australia, interestingly, has actually been better than that than a lot of others, to be frank. I think we've got some really big skills around the country. You know, you can give plugs to lots of companies, be it SIBO Labs, with some of their fantastic stuff they're spitting out on pasture biomass, and mapping through the sort of forest stuff that we're doing and the moving into the agricultural space on the carbon. It's that scaling problem, I think, that we're actually solving now more than the science problem.
Now, some may argue there's a role for government here in creating incentives and helping scale markets.
So government, you know, it's unavoidable. They're going to have a huge impact on practices and that are accepted as reducing emissions in agriculture. Beyond that, you know, the international sort of government influence and policy and the way that starts to impact on ag, you know, obviously in Europe now we're talking about carbon border tariffs that are going to have potentially a significant impact on the requirement for things like industry sustainability frameworks, and not just saying, yeah, we're all great guys, we do a really good job, but actual reporting mechanisms against those frameworks that have an evidence base for the carbon status of the industry so that we can continue to access those markets without incurring tariffs and so on. So it's government is going to have a role. It's unavoidable. Whether it's the right role, look, that's an individual philosophical thing that, you know, everyone's going to have a different opinion on that.
Rob, what do you think?
I agree. I mean, there's always going to be a role of government in the policy and regulatory framework, just like any market, pretty much. And of course, you know, what targets governments decide to set in the future under any international agreement will then be largely setting what the potential emissions rates are and what can be traded. Decisions around whether units can move offshore or whether you can import, they seem like simple decisions, but they have massive implications for, you know, arbitrage in price between countries and a whole lot of issues like that. I think the other interesting role for government that's going to be coming up is what's their role in supporting the core data systems for doing this. A core data is historic weather data, a very good example. You know, that underpins the vast majority of these models and systems that we're all running we need to know that those are going to keep being produced in a suitable manner. Is that an ongoing role for government? I would argue yes, but others may argue no. And in the US, that's a really interesting argument at the moment with NOAA, for example. Same with ongoing measurements. Whose job is it to create better and better models and systems and data and calibrate it? And if we think back to it, the only reason that we've got most of these soil models and data is from historic government-funded research. It's not as if they've appeared overnight. It's 30 to 40 years of funding and high-quality researchers working on this to deliver these systems. So I think the government's going to be heavily involved under any circumstance. It's just a matter of how do they make sure that the market itself isn't being pushed in the wrong way with poor policy.
So we talked a little bit about how government is and can and maybe should get involved. You also mentioned the research sector, so algorithms spinning out and lots of people wanting to play in this space for really good reasons. What are the big research questions that still need to be answered here? Rob, I'll start with you.
Look, I think there's still a lot of questions left, and there's always improving accuracy in areas that we don't have. So soils carbon is a very good one. You know, we've got reasonable tech for getting okay at soil carbon stocks. When you start trying to do change over shorter periods of time and doing change repeatedly, it's not as easy. And you need high quality measurements to calibrate those models, as they're inherently very expensive to do. So there are actually some really big roles there to set up those long-term research trials, for example, that are very unlikely to be funded out of industry. So I think there are a number of, I would argue if there was a big role, it would be setting up a series of high quality sites that need ongoing measurement to actually help calibrate and run the models that are needed to underpin these systems. It's then up to the private sector to take those data and scale them and use them in a sensible way to provide to industry.
Richard?
Nodding in furious agreement with everything Rob's saying, the concept of reference sites, you know, at a granularity that enables a true understanding of baseline and relative improvement. I think that's another, you know, we were talking about perverse outcomes before from outcome-based payment systems. You know, if they're based on absolute improvement, that could be really unfair, you know, for a whole lot of circumstance unless you've got that ability to look at relative improvement.
Were you going to jump in, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. So we haven't jumped into the regulatory space yet, but if we go to an outcome, if we define an outcome before we fully understand all the data, it will lead to the wrong practice. We'll figure out ways to get to that outcome, which aren't in the true intent of what we're trying to achieve. So yeah, I can see the attention in this space being huge over the next 5 to 10 years.
You mentioned before, Rob, accuracy. I want to come back to this point because I do think there's a bit of focus on accuracy in terms of, you know, we really need to understand exactly what is sequestered and we need better tools and tech to dig deeper cores and do that more efficiently and really understand. What do you mean by accuracy isn't sort of the holy grail and why don't we need to focus only on accuracy?
So I'm not saying we want inaccurate data. I think that's probably, I'll be clear there. I'm not saying if the answer is 42. I'm not going to throw that out there as the response. But I think the first thing is to actually focus on the accuracy and the measurements of what we're trying to get to. Soil carbon, again, is a good example, but forests are exactly the same. There's been so much focus on saying we need to get a stock number. We need to get the forest stock number, but we don't really care about that as much. Really what we need if we're doing emissions is we need change. That's a very, very, very different question. You can have a really, really accurate stock map and another really, really accurate stock map a few years down the track and difference them and end up with a very inaccurate change map simply because the variation is huge in these landscapes. So the first thing is to focus on getting the accuracy and measuring what you actually need to measure. I think the other part, though, is there's no point in creating a really accurate map every 5 years, for example, if we're trying to track changes over shorter time periods. So I'd prefer to have less accurate maps every year. I would prefer to make sure that they're cost effective, that they're actually relevant to the mitigation actions, so that when you're actually taking measurements, you're actually saying the soil carbon's gone up and it's probably gone up because of this. So actually more researchy type plot establishments, not just stratifying an area to say how much is the carbon stock, putting research questions in place to say why is this carbon stock different and why is it changing, for example. Now, there's a huge number of measures that you need to consider when you're looking at doing any form of measurement and modelling, and accuracy is simply one of those. It's not the one we should be focusing on 100%. Mm.
Yep. And I think a challenge for the space as we evolve, especially as governments involved, if we think about the ERF in Australia, there's a big focus on accuracy and a big focus on specific ways of measuring, whereas we've also got voluntary markets and insetting and other ways that are evolving to create these incentives. Paul, longer term, what are you thinking about in terms of the incentives for farmers to do this? Is it premiums, market access? These are the things you talked about. And how much are you going to care about accuracy, or what actually is going to be moving the needle for you guys?
In terms of direct incentives, it's a bit of a tricky one for us because we don't buy direct from growers, not at this stage anyway. So we buy through traders who are then accessed from growers. So there's no indication that the grain we're buying has actually gone through these farming systems. So it's a bit of an interesting one, but I think that's the way we need to be going ultimately. If we want true integrity in our supply chain, and hand on heart, we can say that the product that we're supplying our consumers is from the lowest carbon farms in Australia, that's the net level we need to be going to. And that will create value for the grower as well. You know, they know that they've got consistent supply, they've got long-term relationships with Mars as well. So I think that's the space we need to get to. Initially, in the short term, we just want a lower carbon. So we just want to put a program in place which lowers carbon, and then we can work out, you know, getting direct credit for that later.
We've been talking mostly about carbon, I would say. Does the work you're doing and do the perspectives you've shared apply to other kinds of ecosystem services?
Absolutely. And that's what I mean about, you know, broader, more holistic sustainability outcomes. Carbon is the currency that's developing more quickly than anything else. And, you know, even those broader objectives are getting tacked onto carbon as co-benefits, as a premium on the carbon price. A couple of initiatives that are going on at the moment that are working towards building that consistency and compatibility. The Australian Agriculture Sustainability Framework, which is a project that ourselves, the Australian Farm Institute, is involved with, that is part of the Australian Government's Agricultural Stewardship Program. So that framework will be a set of national standards around sustainability that all other industry frameworks can reference against, so that we build this common brand around sustainability. So when a particular industry or a supply chain or whoever is interested in developing a sustainability framework wants to talk about carbon, clean water, biodiversity, whatever the sustainability element is that they're describing, there is a set of national standards that means everyone will be talking the same language, and we build an Australian agriculture sustainability brand. And similar to that, the Natural Capital Investment Initiative, which is being led by ClimateWorks, and I think Sarah's group Acthentic is involved in that as well, is doing the same alignment exercise around the way that natural capital is described and put together.
Great. So I want to get one final comment from everyone before we wrap up here. You guys can pick which stakeholder you're talking to and offer them advice. So you can say, you know, if you're a farmer, if you're a researcher, if you're a startup or aspiring entrepreneur, or if you're an investor, what advice would you have for them in thinking about ecosystem services, markets, and incentives? Rob, you're looking pensive, so I will start with you.
That's because I was trying to think of who I'd attack and
what you can I'm pick playing. More than one.
Okay. Yeah, look, I'm going to try to steal Richard's thunder here since I got in first. I think speaking to farmers, it would be exactly what you're talking about now, which is don't go chasing after the next big fad. Go just looking at your holistic farm practices, and one, where you can save money, because a lot of the time saving money is going to save emissions. And secondly, look at how you're going to increase your productivity. Most of the time, that's also going to help. And just keep an eye on the space. Don't go thinking that carbon is the be-all and end-all straight away for everyone. It's certainly a great market. It's certainly coming on. There's certainly huge opportunities there. But speaking to people like Paul, for example, that are working with farmers, I think is the really key part, where you actually start to form these collaborative groups to figure out how you want to move forward next.
Thanks, Rob. Paul?
Yeah, I'll talk to the girls as well. So I guess the thing I've got out of the last week is for the girls, really educate yourself, really deeply understand the market that you're getting into for a number of reasons. One, it's risk management. You know, every business needs to identify its risks and keep an eye for it, but it's also a competitive advantage as well. And understand the leverage that you've got in this space as well. So if you're at the forefront of this, you can go into the industry and demand a premium because you're providing a premium product. So educate yourself, mitigate the risks, but really look for how you can leverage your business in this new world.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. And Richard?
So I'm going to group bankers and politicians together, or the finance sector, I should say, rather than bankers, because both need, or, you know, they try and look for simple outcomes, and this is not going to be solved by a simple outcome. And that's what I really worry about, particularly with the finance sector, in the way that some of the sector is looking at the way they assess things like natural capital, for instance. Simple outcomes that are about that sort of absolute numbers and broad measurement systems and things, because they have to do it at scale, have the potential to deliver quite unfair, perverse outcomes. We've all talked about how it needs to be about relative improvement at a granular level, you know, all these sorts of things to have truly equitable incentives. So I would plead with the politicians and the finance sector that they need to be aware of that, because I think that there is the potential for that not to be delivered.
And that's it for another episode of AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgVenta Group. For more information, please visit our website, agtechsowhat.com. Again, the audio you just heard was from an Oz AgriTech meetup sponsored by Rabobank Food Bites. We hold regular events like this and have a Slack community with discussions, job boards, and more. So check that out at ozagritech.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Sarah Nolette. Catch you next time.